All right, Ethan, we have seen 6 Blue Jays games in person this year. 17 games have been played. Are you panicking yet?
No, I think we saw kind of just a rinse and repeat of what happened in those first 3 series, I would say. Right, like the Jays looked pretty good. They looked like the team kind of we expected them to be, maybe with a few negative caveats, especially on the starting rotation. But, I mean, the offense has been the offense that we've come to expect from Blue Jays teams of years past. And the bullpen looks surprisingly strong. I mean, we saw a couple, at least one shaky Jordan Romano outing, but he stuck his body in the way, took a liner right in the gut, and saved the day and avoided some disaster. So, you know, all told, I think in the 6 games we've seen Toronto play at Rogers Center, it's been pretty good.
Yeah, I think it's the same Blue Jays, new stadium though. That's where the big changes have come. Yeah, I didn't notice. To be perfectly honest, no, I did notice. It looks good. I think my favorite part of the new stadium, feel free to chime in with something different, is the new bullpens. I think they're super fun. We get a nice little view from our perch in left field of the home bullpen and all the guys warming up before their starts, before they come into games. I was talking to Jeff Ware, the new bullpen coach. He claimed, now take this as a grain of salt, this is his first year coaching in the big leagues, that it's the best view in the big leagues. So he likes their little perch up top.
Among other bullpens?
In. Yeah, apparently. He's been to 3. I'm sure he's been to other stadiums, but he claims it's the best view. So the players like it. I think the fans like it. Those road fans in right field, I've seen videos, and you can even hear them during the game kind of heckling the relievers. They got some fun little chants going on. I think it's fun. Well, what are your thoughts on the new stadium?
Yeah, didn't they go at Alex Lang? That's how you say his name, right? For his turtleneck?
Tigers reliever here.
Spin the wheel of auto-gen-created player Tigers relievers. Yeah, they went after him for his turtleneck. I mean, that's, like, charming and, like, kind of sad, but that seems like a pretty average Canadian jeer. Yeah, I mean, I've liked the bullpens. I don't know if Jeff Ware is correct on that. They're the best he's ever seen, but they look pretty cool, and you know what? They've added a few chairs on top. We saw our man Dave Howell not have a seat. He's one of the Blue Jays.
Yeah, day one, they only had 3 chairs up there. Everyone's playing musical chairs for the seats in the bullpen.
They realized that they needed more chairs in this great view atop the left field bullpen. So, I mean, it's been a lot of fun. The renovations are cool, and we saw the effects, the in-game effects of that low wall in center field on game one. I mean,
what are the odds?
What an intro. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier spoke about how he'll talk about anything, but he certainly liked to talk about the chance of robbing a home run. We know our friend Caitlin McGrath did a story for The Athletic on that very art of robbing a home run, and sure enough, KK does it in game one.
Game one, inning two, and then that inning did not go well for the rest of the game, but that was the Kevin Kiermaier experience. We that first season we got the Kevin Kiermaier experience, or that first series we got the Kevin Kiermaier experience. What about the stuff kind of like away from the ball, or away from like the physical diamond? Like, we got a tour of the new patios, the bars. Have you felt like it's like different at all? They're sitting at around 36,000 people a game right now, 8th in attendance. I feel like there's been like a bit of a buzz, but how has it felt different to you just in general?
Well, I mean, people are eager to try out the new spaces, right? Like, we'll look and like, I think they're opening the ballpark a little earlier than they did last year, right? I think you can
like
get
30
it
minutes earlier.
5 p.m. you can slide in. And we look around, you know, the Corona patio and, you know, the 500 level of right field is just like slammed with people. Same with the catch bar and the 200 level right field. I believe that's the name of it. Those places are always super busy so far. And, I mean, it looks like a good time. And, you know, we've had friends who have gone and said that, you know, the atmosphere is nice. There's live music and that kind of stuff. So, I mean, if it can draw non-hardo baseball fans, I think that's a win, right? Like, you want to be able to feel like you're at a ballpark and not at this concrete warehouse next to the CN Tower. So that in terms of innovation, has been pretty nice.
Yeah, and I think, like, some people are worried that, oh, they're drawing in, like, non-baseball fans. But, like, even if you're drawing in 3,000 more non-baseball fans who aren't going to watch the game, I still think there's, like, an added buzz of just the place being a little more full, it being a little busier. There's just a little more going on. I think it's kind of like that playoff atmosphere where it's like, wow, this place is full. Like, this game matters.
You don't want just baseball fans, man. They can be cranky.
they
can be
cranky.
Too specific. and too judgmental with using relievers and umpires and all that stuff. I mean, you and I have a little giggle every time this happens, but when people are doing the wave in the stands while the Jays are on defense,
we need to do a specific wave pod where I get anti- my wave.
I'm not. I'm not anti-wave. Like, okay, we're pretty divisive on this, so we can have some chats about that. But it's just to initiate a wave while your team is on defense with men on, I might add, runners on, the pitcher's trying to get the signs from the catcher. And there's just the waves going round and round. So clearly, whoever initiated that is not a pure baseball fan. But I mean, if the waves come in your way, and even if you are a baseball fan, I mean, you're going to stand up. Yeah. So
it's hard to disengage.
Blame the people who started it, and the sheep who follow, you're off the hook.
You're talking about Blue Jays pitchers pitching, waves starting, how it could potentially throw them off. Maybe that is the reason that the Jays have had some rotation struggles so far. What a segue by me into our next
topic.
They
had lots of the waves in Houston last night.
Yeah, the first inning, they were just constant waving when Kevin Gausman was getting lit up there. But okay, that seems like the big kind of on-field storyline so far. Like, the offense has been great. The bullpen you mentioned has been solid. The one potential weak spot, or at least divisive spot, has been the rotation. Who are you worried about? Are there any guys you're worried about? Are you worried about the unit as a whole?
No, because we're still early, and we've seen kind of each guy have a decent outing. I mean, maybe not Manoah yet, but we've seen Kevin Gausman, you know, have his 10-plus strikeout game. We've had Kikuchi have a really good game on Saturday against the Rays, and Kevin Cash afterwards said that's the best he'd ever seen Kikuchi.
High praise.
Yes. And then, you know, Chris Bassitt, he looks pretty good against Detroit.
Yeah.
Jose Berríos even looked good against Tampa. Streak-ending starting pitcher Jose Berríos, mm-hmm. as the baseball gods would decide. I mean, those guys have all looked good. So I wouldn't be too stressed about that. My issue is we know some of the guys were bound to regress. I mean, maybe even Gausman a little bit. I mean, now that outing, as someone pointed out on Twitter, it's going to really make it hard for him to scramble back to
Young form.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, sure. A sub-3 ERA is almost off the table. Anyway, I don't think Gausman gives a damn about that. But what we have seen is some troubles from Alek Manoah now. He was bound to hit a stretch in his career where, I mean, you mentioned that this guy's never struggled professionally, really. Not even in the minor leagues, right?
Like, never.
He's at any level of professional base. He had his struggles in college, right, where he was a reliever and he was kind of figuring out what his role would be. But the walks are really up, in line with the strikeouts, almost 1-to-1, right? And he seems to be overthrowing. He's a little prickly after games because he's struggling, and it's understandable. But, I mean, what do you make of Alek Manoah? Before the podcast, you called it concerning, but you didn't necessarily say you were concerned.
Yeah, if that makes any sense. But I think, like, my default is to always go to, like, the numbers, the mechanics, the video. Like, what do I see? What is different? What has changed? And try to figure it out that way. Honestly, with Alec, I think I have to, like, default to kind of, like, the soft science. Like, I think he's a guy who, as you mentioned, has never struggled before. He's clearly struggling right now. Isn't in, as Pete Walker told me, mid-season form. I think that's pretty clear from what we've seen. But the stuff isn't quite there. The velocity was down those first few starts. And he's the guy, at least it seems to me, that he's going to try to chase that velocity, to chase the stuff, to try to chase getting better. And that's, like, not how you can pitch. I think in a similar way we saw, like, bad starts compound with Jose Berríos last year, where if it wasn't going well, he would very clearly start overthinking his mechanics. He'd bounce a couple slurves. Like, he would have very uncompetitive pitches because he wanted it so bad and he wanted to fix it so bad that he, in fact, made it worse. And I'm not saying that Alek Manoah is going to have the 2022 Jose Berríos year, but he is the type of guy I think can overthink things and can try too hard. And so I think he needs a soft matchup against a team where he can go out and just have a good start, and the good start can compound.
Yeah, I like the idea of a soft matchup. And you talk about a guy overthinking. I think Manoah sort of drowns himself on the mound. I feel like that's kind of a way to put it. I mean, he's got emotion and he gets riled up, and I think that makes him better. But, I mean, just as we're kind of fickle, you know, praising him for this emotion and then kind of riding him for it when things don't go right, like, I understand that doesn't sound like a fair criticism, but I think there is both sides to the coin, right? Like, when he is riled up and he's, you know, in his mind, you know, cursing the other team, let's say, for example. I don't know if that's actually what he's doing, but he's fired up, right? He wants to get the other team out. When they keep beating him, that frustration bleeds into his persona very visibly, right? You can see that he's quite upset. So, I mean, with him, Chris Bassett told me he loved, you know, Manoah's emotion. He said, but it's fine as long as he can learn to control it, which is very simply, it was that. So I think this is a big test. I think this is like, I think it's obviously Manoah's biggest test. I'm excited to see where he goes from here, truly, because he's a guy that talks a lot about adversity. He's very open with kind of his struggles and off the field and on the field. So I really think this is where we'll kind of see who Alek Manoah is. You know, it when you have your worst stuff, that's when you got to bear down, and that's where he's at right now. It's not clicking. You can still be a good pitcher with you know, a good attitude and bad stuff. I mean, Chris Bassett told me, he said, not that he says he has bad stuff, but he says, I wish I had Alek Manoah's stuff. I wish I could throw like Kevin Gausman, but I don't. So I have to find my advantages elsewhere, right? And I think Manoah is going to have to lean into that, you know, being a little craftier, pitching to contact maybe, not trying to get everyone out. And I think once his stuff returns, this whole journey through the struggles will ultimately, you know, have been for the better.
For sure. I think it was Mitch White last year who talked about when he was like struggling or losing it on the mound, he would look around for like a zero in the stadium, like on the scoreboard or somewhere. He would just look for a zero, and that like search would switch his brain off. Like it would give him a moment to kind of correct. I'm sure Alek has stuff like that, but it seems like he really needs kind of like an easy reset tool, which is something that in a pitch clock environment is super hard because you only have 15, 20 seconds, and probably 20 seconds if there's a guy on base. So that makes it really hard, but he seems like the guy who needs kind of that mental reset every so often. And you look in the wildcard game last year, he really could have used a mental reset after hitting Julio Rodriguez. And I think if through all this, he comes out of the other side with these tools to kind of calm himself, it'll be so valuable for him in the big games going forward.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we've talked about kind of his struggles in the big games, and it's concerning if you have an ace, right? So like somebody like, I don't know, this is just spitballing, but like Justin Verlander has struggled in the postseason historically, right? David Price had a really tough time pitching in the postseason, right? So, I mean, you want to be a postseason pitcher. You want to be a guy that your team can count on in the biggest moments. And so far, we haven't seen that from Alek Manoah. I mean, the guy is 24, 25, right? I think he's just 25. So it's coming. And this grind, in the end, it'll help him out. And I'm sure once he starts to get on the other side, he'll maybe open up a little bit more to us folk in the media and maybe explain kind of what it's been like to go through this. But he so far is probably the biggest concern in the rotation in terms of...
Is he the only concern for you? Like obviously we've seen kind of the up and down from Jose. He's very much seen the up and down from Yusei.
Let me put it this way. It's the only abnormal development in the rotation, yeah. Apart from Gausman getting absolutely soaked in.
I'm not concerned about Gausman in the least. Like, maybe you're listening to this in 5 days and he gets rocked, but like, I think he's just the type of guy, and we've talked about this a lot, like when you have two pitches and one isn't working or your command's off that day, you're just gonna get rocked. That's the product of who he is as a pitcher.
I'm gonna talk to him more about that, because I just feel like if you're a pitching coach or you're a teammate or you're on defense or whatever, and there's a two-pitch pitcher on your team on the mound, and he's just getting rinsed, and his excuse is, well, you know, I throw two pitches, and they're just going to... Like, that's just not good enough to me. I think you need to use the slider, man. Mix something up. Pitch backwards. I mean, I'm sure Jano and them did all that stuff as they were working through it. And credit to Houston, they just sometimes rake the ball. So, I agree that I'm not concerned with Gausman, but that start has kind of made me think about blowing up that whole kind of, you know, approach of pitching with two pitches and when a hitter can kind of sit on one. I said Alek was abnormal. I mean, did we not expect this start from Jose Berríos, right? Probably, right? You know, a couple bad ones, one good one.
Yeah.
You know, that's kind of the same script. And Chris Bassett, I still think we don't have a good feel for it. I saw Caleb Joseph talking on the pregame show the other day. He said he reached out to James McCann, who's a well-respected veteran backstop in baseball. And McCann, of course, caught Bassett last season. And what Caleb Joseph had said is McCann was talking to him about how it took five starts for both of them to get on the same page, for him to get comfortable, dealing with Bassett's, you know, deep arsenal, his isms on the mound, all the things he wants from his catcher, right? You know, it took a little while to iron it out. So I think April will kind of be a feeling it out month for Bassett, and then we can probably make maybe some better assumptions afterward, I think.
Agreed. I think the big thing was his velocity ticked back up last start, even just a little bit. You want to see that trending in the right direction. Like, he's not a velo pitcher, but he needs to be 92, 93 to get the starter that you paid $60 million for. Agreed, not concerned with him. Jose, I think the one thing you mentioned, like, this is kind of what we expected. The changeup was kind of an interesting development last start.
Friday.
Yeah, exactly, on Friday, especially because the other teams stack left-handed pitchers about him. I got a story coming out, is tomorrow, Wednesday. So if you want to read more about that, go read the story. But he's tweaked it a little bit. He's tweaked his sight lines a little bit, and it was really moving. It got Brandon Lowe, swinging a miss on the Lowe's. Swinging a couple times. It was an interesting kind of anti-lefty weapon that he used.
It was good. I mean, he was throwing it a lot. Yep. He was throwing it first times, pitch, second pitch, third pitch. I mean, if you got ahead with it, you know, throwing it in even counts, throwing it, you know, I mean, it's such a weapon, man. If you can throw, well, he's got that sharp breaking ball that'll like end at your back foot if you're a lefty. And he's got a decent heater too, but then if you can mix in that tumbling changeup, I mean, you got to be kept honest on everything. You can't really lean over the plate, and you can't, you know, kind of get out in front and try and have something in on your hands that you can rip. So, yeah, I mean, Jose was good. Is there anything else you wanted to add about the rotation before we kind of move on?
No, there's one guy we didn't talk too much about, but I think he might be heavily featured in what we have as our surprise guys of the season segment. So, if you want, why don't you kick it off with that guy?
Yeah, I mean, I've been impressed with Yusei Kikuchi. I mean, it's two of three good ones, right?
That's pretty good. They'll take it.
Yeah, I think they will. I mean, I was covering the Tampa Bay Rays this weekend, so I wasn't necessarily totally locked into Kikuchi's numbers. But what I saw overall was a guy who was throwing the fastball hard. I think he got to 98?
Yeah,
97 miles an hour from Yusei Kikuchi. I mean, that's huge. And he went, I think, six full, 9 Ks, maybe one or two runs allowed.
One run, I believe.
Yeah, that is as good an outing as you'll find.
Great start. Yeah.
You know his arsenal a little bit better, right? He mixes in the cutter with this new slider, and he's got his split change and all that. But, I mean, he looked fantastic. And what I've seen from Yusei is, I mean, his demeanor was definitely scrutinized last year, I would say. I think that's fair. Like, I mean, I don't think Yusei is a guy that has that bulldog confidence that Alec Manoah has, rather. But, you know, he seems to be in a better mood. He seems to be more comfortable. You know, he seems to be more positive. And when he's on the mound, he's celebrating. I think he's proud of himself so far. And I think that's a big deal. Now, with Manoah struggling, it's nice that Kikuchi's had a few good outings. Do we expect him to shred through six innings with 9-10-plus Ks every game? Yes. No. Every once in a while. Because he did that last season, too, right? He'll have those high K games. If you're a Blue Jays fan, you want to see just some middle ground every once in a while, right? I think there were conversations about, this is a weird comparison, but, like, in 2021, Steven Matz was good for, like, an outing like that every once in a while. Now, he was not a big strikeout guy, but he often would get shelled, or he would, you know, go six, you know, quality start, right? And he talked a lot about trying to find a middle ground. And I think, as a starting pitcher, that's really all you want. And it's perhaps more elusive than it seems, with you and I just riffing about it for hours on end. But, yeah, I like what I've seen from Yusei, and I'm excited to see a little bit more.
Yeah, I think with Yusei, I do think the Jays and fans and everyone would love a middle ground. I think at this point you're just hoping there's more good starts than bad starts. If you're not going to get the middle ground,
at the end of the day,
just hope there's 20 really good starts and 10 really bad starts, and you'll take the 4.8 ERA that comes out on the other side. But a guy that surprised me, it's going to be, for a team that hits a lot of the surprises so far have been the pitchers. And one guy that has gotten me talking, has gotten a lot of people talking, is one Mr. Canadian, Zach Pop.
Mm.
And it's like, his sinker has always been nasty. When they traded for him last year, it was obvious what they were trading for, this nasty 97, 98 mile an hour sinker. But it weirdly, like, didn't get a lot of swing and miss. And this year, I was talking to him. He's trying to kind of use it to both sides of the plate. Last year, he was using it as really only on his arm side. So that's like the far side of the plate for a left-handed batter. And he'd put it in the middle of the plate and let it run away. Now he's trying to spot it on both sides of the plate, which he's felt has really opened things up. And you look at the numbers, and it's getting a lot more swing and miss. People aren't necessarily sitting on that outside pitch, fouling it off, taking the ones that are clearly balls. They're having to kind of swing over these. And it has turned him into a strikeout pitcher so far. Last year, his strikeout rate was around 16%. This year, it's sitting at 38%. And that is certainly going to play. That's the swing and miss, high velo weapon people have been clamoring for in this Blue Jays bullpen for a long time. And if Zach Pop continues to do that, he is going to be getting higher leverage and higher leverage situations for the Blue Jays.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, not to say that he's hopped up, well, he probably has hopped up the pecking order. I mean, Anthony Bass hasn't been off to a great start, so I think at this point, probably more comfortable using
ahead of Bass and Richards right now, for sure.
But not ahead of Simber, I think, is what we were talking about. Yeah, that could move in Pop's favor pretty soon.
He's probably about comparable there.
I like your point, and we talked, I mean, was it you that talked to Jeff Ware, or was it Pete Walker
about this kind of cause? Yeah, I was talking to Jeff Ware, and he said that pitch, like, left-handed batters are so good at kind of plate coverage out on that outside pitch. And so sinker ballers very rarely get a lot of swing and miss because guys can just get to that pitch. And they're so good at just identifying it and fouling it off. And so he's tweaked his slider a little as well, which has been like an equivalent strikeout pitch to like Carlos Rodon's slider right now, which will certainly play. We'll see if that comes back to earth a little. But if he can just vary things up more and keep guys from sitting on that outside sinker, he's going to turn himself into a very good reliever.
Mm, yeah, and that's where the front door sinker is so important, right? Because if you want guys, especially with velo, so the strategy, if you're a left-handed hitter and you're facing a guy who throws a 98-mile-an-hour sinker, you know, you might move back in the box a little bit. You might look for that pitch away, you know, where you can keep your hands in it and, you know, shoot it to left field, right? But then if he can start spotting it up on the front corner, I mean, you can't sit outside and inside. You got to really... Then you're playing defensive, and that's what Pop wants, right? And then so if you can get the slider going, that's big too. But I mean, it looks like I think I went and checked. Like, is the fastball moving with more vertical break or horizontal break? And no, not really. It's kind of been the same. I mean, we're seeing him on Pitching Ninja a lot more. I think it's perhaps just a testament to the attention he's getting this year and some early success.
I think it's a swing and miss too. Like, you don't get on Pitching Ninja for a fouled off sinker. So if you're getting whiffs, you're going to get
true.
On.
This is true. Yeah, I mean, it's been a great start for him, and he's pretty pretty even keeled, and I wouldn't call him a high strung gentleman in either direction. So I think that's good for him. That's kind of what you need in a reliever who's ready to go at any point in the game. We're interested in talking about Eric Swanson.
Yeah.
It looks, you know, he's kind of been everything Jays fans could have hoped for. Yeah. Fastball isn't going to knock your socks off, but the splitter is still pretty good. He talked to me quite a bit about being able to throw it to right-handed hitters, which was a big thing. He basically, I wouldn't say exclusively threw it to lefties, but he rarely threw it to righties. Then he'd rely on the slider, and he'd try to kind of stay away. And that's not uncommon for a guy who's kind of still getting used to a pitch. I mean, he explained that he had learned it in 2020 and got, you know, really into it in 2021. So I asked him, is that a visual obstruction? He wasn't really kind of sure if that's why he wasn't as comfortable. But, you know, seeing that righty in the right-hand batter's box and your splitter tumbling towards him can kind of throw you off. But he's comfortable now. He knows he's not a starter anymore. Hmm. You know, those days are gone. He's a couple years removed from that. He's happy to pitch in, you know, seventh inning, eighth inning, whenever he's called upon, but he's looked pretty good. What do you think?
Yeah, I think he's been kind of like the Jimmy Garcia 2.0, where he's just going to come in for his specific lane in the sixth, seventh, or eighth. He's like the modern setup man. Both of those guys are just high leverage setup man. You use them after the starter's out of the game and before Jordan Romano gets the ball. You mentioned it's interesting. He wants to use the splitter more against righties. Doesn't look like he has to change much against lefties. Lefties are hitting 0.77 against him. They have one hit and 15 plate appearances. And I think that's super valuable for this bullpen that only has Tim Meza as a lefty. Mm. So if you have Trevor Richards' changeup and Eric Swanson's splitter that you can use against lefties, you can survive with just one southpaw in the bullpen, which I think is super important. It was a concern I had about the bullpen coming in. But yeah, Eric Swanson and Jimmy Garcia being those kind of double-barreled setup man you can use all throughout a game is really elevated this bullpen.
Yeah, I mean, there's just like a little bit more confidence, and I think because we, you and I went did the dance where we looked through the 2021 bullpen, and that is a sorry,
A lot of Joel Piamps innings, a lot of Travis Bergen innings,
Tommy Malone, surprising amount of Tommy Malone outings. There were some. I think Trent Thornton was maybe the second most used reliever, and he had like a 5.71 ERA. Yeah, and he was still out there. Yeah, so this bullpen has come
Anthony
a long
Castro
way.
Setup appearances.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Hey, it netted Bradley Zimmer.
True, big
win,
trade.
Win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's pinch playoff runner. Roster, Bradley Zimmer,
Ooh,
question mark?
Is.
I don't remember.
Did he
if
get
he
into the
it.
Game? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I don't. Well, they didn't win any games, so he didn't come in for his classic, you know, ninth inning closer, Bradley Zimmer, come in for the last defensive inning. Was there anyone else who's kind of stood out to you so far?
Not especially. I can tell you who hasn't stood out.
Ooh,
and
that's
this
a
is
fun
kind
one.
Of
ending
sad.
On a negative, yeah. As always.
I'm still waiting for someone to take that job at second base. Mm-hmm. Man, I've, you know, Cavan has had a tough couple years. I mean, stretches of certainly what he can be, which is high OBP, good gap power, good pull power, you know, the occasional home run. He went through a stretch when we were in Detroit where he was just knocking the cover off the ball. That was good. Espinal, strong start to last season, faded down the stretch, hit a home run on Monday in Houston, but otherwise pretty quiet. And Whit Merrifield, who I think has the inside edge on a full-time role at second base, still waiting for him to kind of have a big game. He's had a couple clutch hits this year,
yeah.
A couple doubles, and he, you know, he's steady enough on defense. We haven't really seen him, well, partially because he hasn't been on base enough, but we haven't seen him kind of explode on the bases the way he looked in spring training and how he was being very aggressive and how, you know, I kind of thought that would be more effective. Toronto's a lineup that can play small ball, but they're probably just going to hit you around anyways. So that's kind of a scenario that I'll be watching closely. I still think as much as Schneider praises versatility, I think it still would be nice to have, you know, a go-to guy there at second base.
And I feel like one of these guys is three good games away from just really taking it and running with it for the rest of the season. Like, Witt hits two home runs in three games, job's his. Cavan starts mashing righties, job's his. And I think that really kind of embodies how much can change at this point of the year. We are in the middle of April. There is still 90% of this baseball season yet to play, and a lot is going to look different in the next 90% of this season. So thanks for sticking with us, and we'll be recording a podcast sometime in the near future.